And good afternoon, and welcome to the Underbelly Podcast, brought to you by Clarity Financial. As we peek underneath, poke around, and expose what other outlets don't want you to know about finance, economics, politics, and, well, just about everything. In the studio with us this afternoon, we have Mike O'Neill, John Carum... John.
John
Camarion.
Come on, you coward. Say it.
I finally got it.
It's National Sleep Day, and I'm deprived. John Camarionis and Richard Rosso. And Mike, take it away. Tell us what we've got going on this afternoon.
I will talk to you in just a moment. I am busy like reposting. Oh. I need to repost just for that. We get at least 3 to 4 people tuning in to watch us live.
Really?
Because I want people to be able to like tune in and talk to us. And you can tune in on Facebook.
Yeah.
If you're, we are hopefully, if you are watching us, you know that we're already streaming on Facebook so that you can see us, you can see me, you can see the beautiful Brent, the beautiful Richard, the beautiful John, as we all sit here and talk about the things
talk
that matter.
Talk about beer goggles.
Yeah.
Really?
I have not been drinking that much this morning.
It's so, all right.
Yeah. So, the one thing obviously that we want to talk about are the markets, because right now, every day this week, markets have like kind of jumped up, and then in the middle of the day, around this time of day, they've been dropping. They jump up, and they were dropping. Mm-hmm. Today, the futures were like, for the past 3 days, they've been holding steady, but right now, the Dow is up 0.5%. The S&P is up 9%, so it looks like we're going to do okay. We may end up on a high note, but I think overall, the week was weak.
Week was weak, but we stay right there at the 50-day moving average on the S&P.
Yeah.
So barely we remain mired. So that's something.
Yeah, we are hugging that support level. We need to see how to. We were talking last night, John. What would be the catalyst to break us out of here? We don't really know yet. We have nothing really, nothing on the horizon
nothing
yet.
Nothing obvious. Yeah, yeah. So as you say, we sit on the moving average. Stock market's up 2 or 3% for the year. So we made back something after the big decline in early February, but now we have some intraday volatility, but just kind of hanging out in a range.
And it doesn't seem like there are any reports or there's no data coming out that's really going to help lift us up. It's like we had a few reports earlier this morning, and we'll talk about it. We were talking earlier about the sentiment index. We talk about the bank rates, personal savings. You're hitting disturbingly low lows. There's just nothing really out there that's going to
And investors are obviously complacent again. Investors just pumped in the most money ever into stock funds for a single week. 38.3 billion in fresh cash
in one week.
Yep. New record, according to Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Yep. And where'd they come up with that cash?
Gosh knows, taken out of bond funds or people have been sitting on the cash on the sidelines. What happened was we had a lot of people that went in January, got in right at the top, sold out. Now they're playing the game again.
It feels safe now, so they're back.
Yeah, it feels safe. Stocks feel safe.
And so we're coming into a time of the year, too. Spring break just finished up, for those of you watching from home. And we're going to get back into the groove for about another 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it's the official start of summer.
Right.
And these guys go away for months at a time, weeks at a time.
I dread summers in the market. The summer before the election, I'll never forget the suspended animation we were in that time. It was the worst.
Is it boring? This is going to be my first time paying attention to the markets when the summer rolls
around.
Well,
it was really deteriorating underneath. The underlying foundation of the market was not looking good the summer before the election.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we were sort of stuck at a level. If anything, the political news might drive the markets this time around. We're definitely going to be more headline driven until we get some economic data for sure.
And we do have midterm elections.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a thing.
That's right. And there is a saying, sell in May and go away. And there's actually, I've seen studies that suggest there's statistical evidence for that.
For people to do that.
There's good reason to do that. So,
As I mentioned, the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index came out today.
What were the sentiments?
The sentiment is actually really good, but there was a lot of interesting numbers in this because across the board, when you just look at the headline, it like looks really good. The chart shows that it went up 2% from last month to index level of 102. When it comes to index, that number really doesn't mean a lot, except it is at the highest level that it's been since 2004. So in the past 14 years, we have not seen it this high, consumer sentiment. But most of that sentiment, most of the people who are optimistic about the economy, that's the lower 30, the people with a income earners in the lower third.
Okay.
So they are the ones that are most optimistic about the economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the people in the top 30%, they actually were like a little more bearish on it.
Pulling back.
Yeah. Well, listen, if the low income households are feeling a little bit better, I'm all for that.
Sure.
So
well, they got that extra $15 in their paycheck this week.
Yeah. Until they get their health care premium.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that $1,000 bonus is not going to go far, especially when you have to pay the taxes on it.
Is that going to be the other shoe that drops when like in June, the middle of the year, when those people's health care insurance terms and they, okay, here's your next premium for July through the end of the year, and we all know it's going to go up. Is that going to be one of the catalysts that creates some kind of anxiety?
I don't know. I think we live in a state of anxiety overall. We just learned to live within the low hum of it because, I mean, look at what's going on with credit card defaults.
Right.
You know, we look at where credit card rates are, personal savings rates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if borrowing costs continue to go higher, I mean, it's going to be distress for households to begin with.
Yeah.
I guess people just feeling more confident. If anything, I talked to a few people, and this is so anecdotal, but people that, you know, just as they go through my day and what they feel better about is not that they're getting a raise, it's just that they feel like they're not going to lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the next phase is like, I feel like at least I'm going to remain employed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if I ask, what about a raise? They're like, well, we're not talking about that. I'm just happy that I still have my job, and it looks like I might have it for an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So we've moved to that stage.
I think Rich is right. I think higher rates could really hurt families who are carrying debt. I would extend that a little bit, and I would say higher rates could also hurt corporations that have loaded up on debt over the past 10 years. Interest rates have been so low. There's been such an incentive for companies, of course, to load up on debt.
Mm-hmm.
The low rates have also allowed, arguably, companies that wouldn't be viable with higher interest rates to borrow money to continue operations, to keep people employed. So I get why the Federal Reserve has lowered rates. They don't want a lot of companies who are on the margins going out of business, laying people off. So this has kept them alive. But if rates go up a little bit and companies have to renew loans, roll the debt, as they say, there's going to be trouble, I think.
Well, and has the Fed painted itself into a corner here? I mean,
it's more like caged themselves.
Well,
because
we all know if they start to do that, what the reaction is going to be.
Yeah.
Well, and it's going to happen soon, right? I mean, the Fed is meeting next week. Isn't that when they're expected to announce that they're going to at least the first of possibly three this year interest rate increases?
That's the big argument now is we pretty much know the next one's baked into the cake. I mean, the two-year Treasury is telling us that. It's more of the fact is there going to be three or four rate hikes?
Right.
That's the question.
Yeah. Yeah, and if things don't look so robust, do we go from three to two?
Camp is starting to emerge.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more in the two camp, but again, this is just a guess.
And the CPI did come out, I think it was earlier this week, right? And it actually had slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, as estimated.
So, you know, but that
it is heating up, though. If you look at it month over month, you are seeing a little bit of a pickup there. That's enough for them to at least start.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether or not you get this three or four. I mean, I think the four has been sort of pushed away
that's going away now. Yeah,
yeah, that's out
and,
in the periphery
somewhere. And so investors
somewhere.
Are more confident knowing that maybe we're going to stick with the three that we were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's always this year is going to be about interest rates, inflation.
Yeah,
that's really what it is.
True,
if those inflation numbers come in and they're heated and not as expected, that's what's going to cause your big problem.
Yeah.
Now, this year, when we're talking about this year is a big anniversary. Talking about the anniversary of the collapse of Bear Stearns, and you and I were talking about this, John, earlier.
Yeah, so this is a very big
happy
anniversary.
Happy
anniversary, right? So Bear Stearns, of course, collapsed a decade ago, and they fell into the arms, I suppose, where all those assets that they held fell into the arms of J.P. Morgan.
Yep.
I think the initial sales price was going to be $2 per share, Rich.
Yep.
Help me remember.
That's
it was deemed too low, and then the price was elevated to 10 or 12.
I think it was like 10 or 12 bucks. Yeah,
yeah,
from what I remember. But I remember that whole wrangling
while
I was on the floor of my office trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
What
was
hiding under the desk.
Right? Oh, my gosh. I was like, my goodness, is this the end of the world?
Duck and cover.
Yeah, yeah. So, Rich, it's interesting that we can tie this to what you started with, which is that investors have put $38 billion into the stock market this week. They're feeling more confident. Jason Zweig of the Wall Street Journal has an interesting piece this weekend that's now on the website. Maybe differing, or maybe Jason's being a contrary indicator here,
okay,
because he says that the a decade after the crisis, investors still have a lower trust in the market, basically. He says perhaps the biggest loss was the public's loss of trust in the markets themselves. That was the biggest effect of the crisis.
Because there are people, and you know it.
Yeah.
They're not coming back.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. They left, and they don't care if the market goes up 1,000%. It's a casino to them. And you know what? Based on the advice they've been given and how they've ridden out losses, I can't blame them.
Yeah,
I really cannot.
Yeah. That's why it continues. So their faith in the ability of stock pickers to outperform has vaporized. Saving for retirement often seems like a lost cause, and speculative temptations like Bitcoin and other digital currencies can feel almost irresistible. Mm-hmm. So that characterizes the
There's
the
still
state
a
of
hate, and I still have some of it, quite a bit of it, for the system. And again, I am not a person or an advisor that is going to push stocks on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and tell them that it is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and my gosh, you're just never going to make it if you don't invest in stocks. I totally understand where they're coming from, only from living through these cycles.
And we've talked about this before, Rich. I think some advisors, or there's almost a temptation in the industry to shame investors.
It is.
Into buying, you can't handle stocks, of course, but don't you know you're going to make bigger returns from stocks?
You're an idiot
if
you're not. And not only that, I'm going to give you a big badge of courage for holding on do a 37% bear market and waiting 7 years to come back to even.
Yeah.
Because that is smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So,
and that's what a lot of the pundits try to do. They try to intimidate investors. And frankly, investors do not appreciate it.
Yeah.
At all.
I think that's right.
You're not going to not encouraging retail investors at all. You're just shunning them away with your arrogance.
I want to kind of roll off from that.
We're going to roll again
and review a little bit.
That's what the music is for. You weren't here last week. That music means segue. We are changing subject.
Yes,
well,
I
but
like
not
it.
Not entirely.
Not fully.
It's related. That's
because
why it's quiet.
On last night's show, on Thursday night's show, we had Professor Teresa Giardelli.
Yep.
Giardelli. Yeah.
Thank
that's
you.
The candy.
Giardelli.
That's the chocolate. Giardelli.
There you go.
That's the chocolate professor. Where this is Giardelli.
Giardelli, the Giardelli. There you are.
But she's come up with an alternative to the 401ks.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this with her. And
she's my big crush.
Recap that
for us crush.
Briefly.
Well, she's coming up with a series, and she worked again with Tony James.
Yep.
Rock star at Blackstone, to come up with a solution, a hybrid defined benefit solution, a guaranteed retirement account.
A replacement for a 401k.
A replacement or a supplement, Rich.
Yeah, it's more of a replacement, but I think it also could be a supplement.
It would be a replacement for a 401k, but it would supplement Social Security.
That's right.
That's right. And it's giving you your pensions back.
Yeah, yeah.
In some form. And guess what? Lower cost for the organization, the corporation that puts it in. Revenue neutral for the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dual contribution. Only if you're starting young, only 1.5% contribution by the employer, 1.5% contribution by the employee,
right,
along with some tax deductions and credits. But what it does is it gets the lower income households sort of up to par.
That's right.
As far as saving and providing an income you can't outlive, because the greatest myth we have in the market today is that you can create a guaranteed lifetime income with variable assets like stocks and bonds. Do they complement a fixed income or a fixed portfolio?
Income stream, fixed
of course. Yeah. But are they the is it the panacea?
Are they
no.
the solution? No.
No. No. It's a compliment.
It
and she has come up
so
with Tony
good.
James with an incredible solution for this. It didn't sound very hopeful, though.
Well, and we were talking just before we came in here a while ago. Why haven't
rescuing retirement?
Put it right in front of the lens there.
Why haven't
more people embraced this? Especially the guys that make the rules that we all have to live.
The guys
by.
Who make the rules want you to be in stocks to collect fees on managed product.
Yeah.
This is a very lower cost way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably destroy the current models that we have right now.
Yeah.
So it's just not popular. It's just like, remember when President Trump came out and said he was against the 401k, or they were going to stop 401k mm-hmm. contributions, mm-hmm. but no one's talking about the benefits of a Roth option, yeah. and yeah. yet there are studies out there that right. show you that Roth is a better choice. Uh-huh. There was one writer for Business Insider, a young woman who got a hold of that study and wrote about it, and I commended her about Wall Street is just wants you to lock this money up into traditional yeah. and not touch it. Now, you can't touch this option that Professor Gallarducci was talking about either.
Right.
But you will certainly have an income stream yeah. for the rest of your life.
So,
and every plan I run, if any 100% of the plans I run for people who have pensions, they're able to retire earlier or at least on time and have, I mean, their numbers are just outstanding because they have Social Security and pension and they've been good savers
right.
In stocks and so forth. And they're able to weather out bear cycles or issues. They don't have to touch that money at the very worst time.
And that's the key. We got a great call from a young caller last night.
Yeah, great. 25-year-old fellow. Man. Yes.
He has started saving. He's thinking seriously about it. He's already doing it. And he just wanted some help from us. And,
yeah.
and that's what you have to do. You have to start saving. You have to start saving early. And, Buffett calls compounding the eighth wonder of the world. And it is. If you start saving at 25 years old, you don't have to save as much to meet your retirement goals. The earlier you start, that compounding gets rolling.
How common was it that, I mean, this 24-year-old, not only that, had an emergency
right. savings. He had an emergency savings.
He even knew the language. Yeah. 3 to 6 yeah. months worth of living expenses. Yep. I almost fell over.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Brent would have had to do the rest of the yeah. show he with was, you last night.
He was talking like a financial planner, right?
He was. Yeah, he was following the right steps.
Yeah. Well informed.
Yeah. And yet he was going to start a new job, small company, and guess what? They didn't have a plan,
yeah.
and they didn't have a retirement plan for him to contribute to, which is one of the...
This is the problem that the book discusses.
Exactly, that yeah. this would be a very low-cost option for small business
yeah.
to implement.
Yeah.
So it would be... You would cover so many more workers. Her work, Teresa Gallarducci, for the New School, she's got a great blog. I mean, she just continues to press the envelope yes. with this. And, I told her I would support her in any way I can.
She made a comment last night that it's almost going to take a grassroots movement
absolutely
to get this going.
To get
and
this
so
done.
Maybe we start that grassroots movement.
Sure. Unfortunately, right here, right now.
You're yeah. not going to have many advisors that are going to be for this or understand yeah. this. But it's just unfortunate that you're not.
It's funny. The 401k, as we were discussing, is mm-hmm. an accidental policy.
It was never
intended to
right.
be the go-to retirement savings plan for most Americans. It was a loophole. Yeah, it was a loophole in the tax code for mostly wealthier people who had profit-sharing plans. Mm-hmm. And so,
right, deferred comp plans. This was the way for them to put a little bit more money away or save more.
It just happened to arise. Exactly. It just happened to arise at a point in time when companies were giving up their pensions.
Yeah.
And so this thing looked like an okay replacement. And then it has wound up enriching Wall Street because every employer now has to go to a bank or a Wall Street house and say, we want a 401k plan. Please put it together for us. And there's so many administrative expenses to the plan. It's so cumbersome. It just doesn't make sense. But yet it's the plan we have. And so I think Professor Gallarducci is fighting a good fight here, trying to replace it with something more reasonable.
And when shareholders became the priority over employees, when you have to hit yeah. these quarterly reporting numbers, mm-hmm. you take or place the risk of investing back onto the employee and take it off your books.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Doing that right now with healthcare.
Yeah.
Okay, you are now taking it away. You're taking the risk and placing it back onto the employee.
Mm-hmm.
So not only do they have the risk of saving retirement, but they also have the risk of paying exorbitant fees for insurance. Because frankly,
yeah.
the insurance you're getting today, and again, health savings accounts are great for high deductible mm-hmm. plans, but for the most part, you have a catastrophic policy.
Yeah.
If you have anything minor that you need to do, mm-hmm. but based on what your premiums and your deductibles are, mm-hmm. you're paying out of pocket.
Sure. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're paying sure. out of pocket.
Yeah, that first $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 that you got to hit.
That's right.
Before the thing kicks in.
Yep.
Come on.
So it's catastrophic coverage is what you're paying.
Yeah. Sure. And when talking about, you know, when going back and talking about savings, you know, people don't have the savings to cover those medical expenses. You know, Bankrate just came out with their numbers. They just released a survey.
Oh, they depressed me with these numbers.
This is disturbing.
It's clickbait.
I know it is.
And
I click it too.
I clicked on it. We all clicked. I think I reported on this because you shared it, Rich. 19% of Americans are not setting aside any of their money in savings. And when you add up the first three, you know, it's like for those who are saving nothing, those saving like 5% to, you know, and under 10%, 65%. 65% of Americans are saving less than 10% of their income.
And how many of them would or did, and then they got knocked on their butts by something?
Well, Teresa Keller, what you said, it's life got in the way.
Yeah.
Okay, if you had a pension option or this kind of option, this hybrid option, it wouldn't matter if life got in the way. It's 1.5%, and you're going to meet your goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big difference.
The fellow last night had a 401k at a previous job, had now switched jobs where he did not have a 401k, and so he was looking for a savings plan.
So we talked to him about the Roth, but he does not have a plan.
By the way, did he call up this morning?
What?
Did he call you?
No, he didn't. How dare he not call me?
He's probably calling right now. Why isn't that Richard answering?
That's
darn it?
Right.
It's a big crisis. It's and Lance talks about this too. I know for a fact it's just like savings nirvana to start at 25 and save for 45 years. But as Lance talks about all the time, in realistic terms, you probably got a good 15, 20 years of savings in you, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're going to lose money and take half of those years to break even, what the heck you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
So the other thing that we were talking about was the tariffs. It's like tariffs plus 1 week now. You know, Trump, he signed it. He said these tariffs. And then he came back around, and then, it's like because he talked about the carve-outs. I think the only reason that the markets really didn't go nuts was because he was carving out exemptions for Mexico and Canada and pretty much any other country who comes knocking on their door.
And with Kudlow in there, forget it. Kudlow's going to have the shortest tenure next to Anthony Scaramucci.
Is that not like oil and water mixing? Because he is absolutely, totally against tariffs.
Completely against them,
When he talks about that mother's milk of prophets, so it makes me sort of queasy. I don't know why.
So just a few minutes ago, the European Union made public a 10-page list of American products that are potential targets for retaliation if these tariffs just came out.
What do you have on there?
It says, as expected, we have bourbon, which is a specialty for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Cranberries, which is where Paul Ryan, that's Wisconsin.
There goes
that's
those two state. Guys standing in the bog.
Orange juice from Florida.
There goes my cranberry-flavored bourbon.
Yeah. Or orange juice from Florida and tobacco from North Carolina. So those folks are the EU. They know exactly where to hit us where it hurts. Hitting us in the swing states. They're hitting us in the states with, where
they're not going to hold political majority. But we're still at McDonald's and Burger King. We're still good, right?
They're still good on that.
Whataburger's all fine. Okay.
But they're hitting back as predicted because that's what tariffs do.
That's what tariffs do.
You put them in place. The other guys put them in place, and it escalates.
It's really the retaliatory action. Yeah. Even if it's minor, you're setting off a spark.
Exactly.
And that also can affect animal spirits. But I remember a report even from Toyota Motor Cars. Toyota was coming out and saying, hey, listen, you're going to see cars go, maybe an average add another $300 to $400 per automobile if we do this too.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom. Can't talk. Sorry.
Okay.
I know. That's right. Against the rules, against podcast rules, I left my phone on. Darn me.
Switching gears again.
We should put a tip jar on the console, and whoever's phone goes off first has to drop a dollar in it.
Penalty there you
jar,
go. Yeah. There
dollar,
you go.
Goodness,
dollar. I'll drop a Bitcoin, yo. So, yeah.
It's more than a dollar, dude.
And there's something kind of funny going on out there. President Trump has been apparently going around. He had this private fundraiser where he was talking about a so-called bowling ball test.
Really?
That he says that cheats U.S. auto companies out of selling cars to Japanese consumers.
At this fundraiser yesterday in Missouri.
I don't have the actual
don't want
sound.
That?
No,
okay,
I don't want
I'll,
the sound yet.
I'll
no,
turn
but
it
thank
off.
You for that. But
the bowling
this
ball.
This is a live thing.
Sorry about that. Have you heard about this? Yeah, so the Washington Post was reporting it, confirmed to CNN by an attendee at this fundraising speech in Missouri. And he talks about the bowling. He says, it's the bowling ball test. They take a bowling ball from 20 feet in the air, and they drop it on the hood of a car. And if the hood dents, then the car doesn't qualify. It's horrible.
What do you mean, if a hood dents?
Yeah.
Have you seen the gauge of metal they put in any vehicle these days?
Right.
And they're doing it with a convertible.
I know.
So now the Washington Post, and he's apparently repeated this a couple times, and now they're going around, and they're looking. They're like, I don't know, and nobody knows anything about this bowling ball test that the president is talking about. And he says that this is a reason that we can't sell cars in Japan because of the bowling ball test.
Wasn't that a bit that Letterman did?
A lot of people would drop stuff off the roof? A lot of people are talking about that, that they think they saw it on like David Letterman or some late night show where they dropped it on
watermelons
top of the car.
And stuff.
Or something. And so no, so they asked Sarah Sanders about it yesterday. Actually, this part we can play. It's okay. Like if you want to turn me up
You're
here,
ready.
Hang on.
Yeah, go ahead.
The president talking about environmentally unfriendly standards that the Japanese allegedly apply on U.S. Imported automobiles talked about a bowling ball test where a bowling ball is dropped from 20 feet in the air on the hood of a car, and if it dents, the car doesn't qualify. And he said, this is horrible.
Yeah.
I worked in Japan for about 20 years. I covered the automotive industry. I don't recall anything like this. No one we've spoken with in the industry recalls it. Did you speak with the president about this, and where did he get this from?
Look, the president's been talking about unfair trade practices for decades. It's not new for him. Part of the reason he was elected was to end unfair trade practices and push for free, fair, and reciprocal trade so American goods can compete in more foreign markets. Obviously, he's joking about this particular test, but it illustrates the creative ways some countries are able to keep American goods out of their markets.
Wait a minute. He's joking about
it? He's just joking about it. It's just a joke.
How do you know?
Don't take him seriously. It's funny, actually, when you're, you know, it's like it's one thing to listen to those press briefings, but when you actually watch them, that was Sarah Sanders. Sarah Huckabee Sanders from yesterday.
Yeah.
But she's
amazing.
She's really good. She's sharp.
You cannot rattle that woman at all. Because
awesome.
I would have just laughed.
Yeah.
I would have just like,
exactly.
You know what? That was funny shit, I would have said.
But when you're watching it, it's like you can see, it's like as the question is being asked, she's just kind of like looking down because you know that a large portion of that answer is pre-scripted because she's following it verbatim. A lot of things she repeats are verbatim. And so that line about
on
how...
target.
Exactly. You know, you can't wing it.
No.
Spicer. You know, so...
what would he have said? I would have wondered what he has said.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, you know, it's like, no, this is... I'm getting off topic.
Yeah.
I cannot speak extemporaneously. I need my own, yes.
Left the dinner early and my great-grandmother threw meatballs...
Really?
My car, so that was the meatball test.
Yeah.
It did not dent the hood of my car.
Did it dent?
No.
How dense were your grandma's meatballs?
It looked like it looked horrible though. But those meatballs hit that thud,
stained the paint.
Oh goodness!
Yeah. But yeah, so you know, Sarah, she's always looking at her notes. She delivers the company
Absolutely.
Line, and then she came out while the president was obviously joking. And so then that kind of got me, you know, because then there's also the report about how he was reported at a private fundraising speech in Missouri on Wednesday. Oh, I'm sorry. I got it mixed up here. There was another story. The Washington Post reported that Trump had claimed that he had made up facts when he talked about the U.S. having a trade deficit with Canada when he met with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And he says, you know, I had no idea. I just said, you're wrong. And he basically said that it's like Canada, we have a trade deficit with Canada. And the prime minister is like, well, actually, no, it's a surplus. You have a surplus. And, you know, so they asked Sarah Sanders about that. And she says, well, if you look at those numbers as a surplus, yeah. But when you throw in other things like timber and these other services and such, then it's a very definite deficit. So,
well,
you know,
like one of those economic reports, X this and X that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
X energy and food and everything you need to survive.
It's like lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yeah.
That's what we're up against here. So. But I guess the question is that can you trust the president? Can we trust the president on what he's saying? If he's going up there, he's saying that the reason that we have to have these tariffs is because ridiculous bowling ball standards, and he gets a billion of applause, and we're like, well, he must know what he's talking about. He's the president, and it's like, no, he's joking. Well, he didn't throw up air quotes. He didn't say hashtag just kidding. You know, so I'm just wondering, is like, can we trust the president on what he's saying? And if we can't trust him on these things, when people are accusing him of things, and this is my way of getting into the Stormy Daniels discussion that Brent doesn't want to get into, you know, how can we trust that those things are valid?
Here's what's going to happen is we're all going to develop this mentality. Who was it that said trust but verify? Was it Reagan?
It was.
Okay. So with Trump, you've got to trust but verify. And when you verify and you find out it's wrong, then people are going to say, oh, well, it's just Trump.
Right.
That's sort of what happens.
That's
what's
going to happen anymore. That's what it is.
I think you're going to do that with every political figure. I don't think anybody's accountable for what they say anymore anyway. I think everybody's discounted pretty much everything. You just look at the results and the actions.
Yeah.
That's what I do now. I just look at the data, which is great about being here with Lance. We just look at the data and see what's coming coming due on that part of it. I forget what anybody says about bowling balls and meatballs or whatever the heck.
But if you need to take action on it, and if it's something like this important. Stormy Daniels, yeah, it's not important. Salacious, but it's not important, really. You know,
Who cares about her?
Here's the reason that I'm bringing up Stormy.
I discount everybody named Stormy.
Yeah, Stormy. Okay. Here's the reason I brought it up, because last week on The Underbelly, we talked about what a great Sunday was going to be. By the way, that O.J. Simpson confession.
Oh, that
travesty?
That was amazing.
That was a waste of electrons.
It was fantastic.
Look,
just
my mouth was open for so much through that thing. I'm pretty sure there were some bugs living in there.
your mouth was open. Your eyes
I was
were
amazed
closed.
By how many times he put his foot in his mouth. I mean, like, I wasn't there, but I picked up the knife, and then I did this, and then I stabbed her, and I didn't stab her. Man. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying it was a train wreck to watch. You couldn't pull away. Well, I didn't want to watch it, but I could not turn away.
You couldn't avoid it at a certain point.
Yeah. But, you know, we just talked about all the things that people are worried about right now.
Yeah.
Who has the brain power to waste on that kind of stuff?
But that's what we waste our brain power on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, what's Kim Kardashian doing today?
Who cares?
Today she's out there, let me tell you. I have the answer. She's apparently out there blasting people who are putting out these memes comparing Kanye West to the character in Get Out.
Oh, those are great.
Remember that?
Whoever started those, you're genius.
Yeah. The black boyfriend.
So there is
coming
some
in.
Entertainment value.
Oh,
in
the
yeah. So there is that. But yeah, for the O.J. Simpson, here's the one thing about the O.J. Simpson thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you never hear him express concern about, I don't know who did it, but I need to find out. I need answers about who really did it.
He never talks about
that.
Because he knows.
Never talks about it. Because the guy is in the mirror. That's mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm. And not this random Charlie that he brought up in his hypothetical.
If that was any of us, we would be like, I will not die.
Yeah.
I will die finding these people.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's like,
I'm
Dr.
like, where
Richard
is that?
Kimball, the one chasing down the mm-hmm. one-armed man mm-hmm. for six seasons.
Right. I mean, I'm going to find this guy.
Exactly. And you never have that kind of concern from him. All you get is that he goes and the one really surprising thing, he went and he was seen yelling at her gravestone, saying, see what you've done, see what you've done, and still angry
still
and yelling
wants to
at
kill
him.
Her. Yeah. And she's gone.
And the one thing that really pisses me off is that it has ruined the Naked Gun movie series for me.
Yes, I can't watch those either.
I can't watch them now. You know, and that's the most disappointing.
I can't even watch The Towering Inferno because he's in that too.
Right. Oh, that's right. So anyway, is that a good segue? Can we use that segue to get into talking about movies coming out this weekend? There you go.
I just watched.
What did
you
watch?
The fourth time, the Infinity War. Trailer.
The Infinity War trailer.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait.
Yeah, so
I cannot wait.
And that is. Wait,
anybody's going to call me a racist, by the way, because I haven't seen Black Panther. Because I haven't been getting. I'm getting that. Black Panther is in this movie, so
yeah.
I.
And you really should watch Black Panther. I was actually.
I do. It looks like great. I just have not gotten to the movies yet.
Yeah,
I haven't seen a movie since about 1976. I don't know what that makes me.
Oh, you are.
You can put on me.
Like, there's not even a word for you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like, do you even exist? I mean, come on. No, yeah, the Black Panther is amazing, and I do want to watch it again. It's spring break, and my wife is home, so I have a little less free time. I'm waiting for her to go back to school. You know, she's a teacher.
She won't go with
you.
Huh? Well, she went with you already.
She went with me once. She is.
But
she
once
is
enough,
never a.
Right?
She will never watch a movie twice.
See, and I will.
I can't. Yeah,
well,
I love
most
it.
Women will not do that. They will not go with you twice.
My wife should because she sleeps through them the first time through.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So the Infinity War trailer came out. This is the first official trailer. We've had the teaser trailer.
Right, but this was the first official trailer.
Where you actually saw some of the action. And so the premise for those who haven't been keeping up is mm-hmm. that this is. It's been 10 years since the original Iron Man. So now all...
Has it really?
Yeah.
So 10 years. Believe that?
All of these Marvel movies are coming together. So you have Iron Man, Captain America, Black Panther, Spider-Man now that he's in the fold. Even the Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor. They're all coming together because there's this new threat, Thanos. He's this god. He's got the powers of a god. He's an alien. But he has this goal of wiping out... half the universe. And he can do it because he has this thing called the Infinity Gauntlet, which is basically a glove, and it has these stones that have different powers attached to them. Mm-hmm. Now, throughout these 10 years worth of movies, they've been given little hints that, about where these stones are at.
Right.
Ah.
Yeah. So one of the first ones that we saw, it was it's a blue glowing stone, and that was powering Loki's weapon.
Right.
And, you know, for Thor. And then the next one is a life stone that powers Vision. And then the stone, which was the big MacGuffin that they had for, I know you'd appreciate that, the big MacGuffin that they had for the original Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. That was another one of those stones. So all of these stones that are popping up, and I think one is in Doctor Strange.
Yes,
and so,
there is, yeah.
Yeah, so Thanos, when he puts them all in the glove, he becomes one of the most powerful beings in the universe. And so it'll be interesting to see how they can keep up with him. So now,
this movie's for geeks only, man.
Yeah, we are. I am totally geeking
out
here.
Sounds like you were taking notes.
Oh, he was.
Oh, yeah.
Was too.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about it. I've gone through there like YouTube videos saying this, like, where are the stones? Here's the stones. And then I actually do at the end of the trailer. There is just one great moment here. And am I turned up?
Would you like to be?
Yeah, let's turn it up.
Here we go.
Yeah, this is the one great moment. This is where Spider-Man is meeting Doctor Strange.
Oh, I love this
for the first time.
The lines in this movie are killer.
Yeah. Here we go.
I'm Peter, by the way.
Doctor Strange.
Oh, you're using your made-up names. Then I am Spider-Man.
There you go.
But there are a lot of these lines that are so clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good writing right there.
Yeah. I actually liked in the first Avengers when they were talking about Thor and they were talking about Loki and why they need to get rid of him. They were talking about what a crazy man and thing and... And Thor says, mind you, that is my brother you're talking about. He says, he just killed 30,000 people. He goes, well, he's adopted.
Yeah, right. They just throw stuff like that out there. I mean.
Yeah. And I did, this is a cheap plug for my movie review series, Movie Minute with Maiko. I just put out my first one because I saw Tomb Raider. Thank you very much.
Oh, you did, huh?
Tomb Raider already.
Yeah.
Now, this is a reboot of the series. Mm-hmm. You know, Angelina Jolie. Well, it started in two movies back in 2001, 2003, and they were not that very good. They were not that good.
They were great.
You liked them? And so
I know why you remember.
How are these? Better story.
It's a better story. It's an origin story.
You like this one, though, because who plays the Tomb Raider in this
Alicia
one?
Vikander.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Ex Machina.
Yeah, from Ex Machina? Yes, or Machina? Ex Machina. Yeah, so she's fantastic. So here's the basically what happened is that you had the game series, and that's the one that Angelina was in.
Yeah.
And they recently rebooted the game series to do an origin story with Lara Croft. Now, the story is that Lara Croft, she comes from a wealthy family, and she goes on these adventures in the game. You have to go, you have to solve puzzles, and you're, you know, looking for treasures. Now, that's what Angelina Jolie did, but now this is showing her before all of that starts. So
it's a prequel.
It's a prequel. Mm. It's an origin story. So we get the origins of how she became to be such a badass, if you will. So she's living poor. She's, you know, she's a bike delivery person. She's like taking fighting lessons, kind of living on the streets on her own. She doesn't want to take the family fortune because it would require her to declare her father dead. And his father, her father went missing. And so that's kind of the setup. And then, you know, she goes and she finds out eventually that the reason that her father is missing is because he went chasing after this myth of a ancient queen named Hamika who had power over life and death. And he says that there's an evil corporation trying to get to it. I have to find it first just to protect it. And he disappeared. So here we are 7 years later. Now Laura finally says, okay, I'm going to find out what's going on with my father. She's given a little puzzle box, and it just leads her into his private sanctuary where he's got all the clues. She follows the clues. She ends up on the Devil's Island. And there, that's when she is now on her own, and she has to try and survive, find the tomb, find the queen, stop the evil corporation that's there.
You took notes in this movie, too, didn't you?
I have it committed to memory, yeah.
This sounds like an on-demand movie for me.
Yeah, and I think it's good for that. I mean, so here's my actual review. That was a little bit of a plot synopsis. Here's my little review. Is that it's ironic that a movie that is based on a game series where you have to figure out mysteries, solve puzzles, the writers and the director here, they just spoon feed you everything. Everything. Right,
the because you don't want to be thinking about it.
You don't, yeah.
So
you
want to be spoon fed all this stuff.
It's for 14-year-old kids with ADHD.
Yeah. But I mean, even they are into like playing games where there's like twists in the middle of it. Yeah. And it's like they just don't trust them. At the very, prologue to the movie is basically the father explaining the secret of the queen, and it's like, I'm going to have to go find her, even if it's doing the one thing that I don't want to do, and obviously leaving Lara behind. Fast forward 30 minutes into the movie, that exact same part of the script is repeated verbatim because that's when Laura finds out, you know, the secret about why her father left her, and it's like they just didn't trust
like
you to wait
just in case you missed it the first time
exactly
around.
In case you missed
just
it
in case
the first
you
time.
Had to go out for more popcorn. That's yeah. what it is.
I don't want movies to be so complicated. I'm still trying to figure out Inception. I mean, Christopher Nolan can write a script, and I get caught in the loop, and I'm still trying to figure out what's
going
on.
That top is still
spinning,
I know it. I've
watched Inception about 10 times, and I still can't figure it darn thing out, and that frustrates me at the end.
Wasn't that great in Inception when you watched it for the first time, when you see that top spinning right there at the end, and it cuts to black just as it looked like it's about to wobble?
And you don't know.
The crowd just went nuts. Yeah, they were
no. I wanted to rip that screen up.
Yeah. No, that was fantastic.
Oh, because you never really knew.
We have one spinning here, and...
Well, we know this one's going to stop, but we never really knew whether that one was going to.
Do we? If you're looking on Facebook, you can see it spinning around. I don't know if
it's
going to stop.
That's what makes Christopher Nolan.
What are you doing to us here?
A master. Christopher Nolan is a master. There it is. He really is.
Yeah, no, Christopher Nolan is good. And he's really good. It's like he really likes playing with
your head.
Time. Yeah,
and
he likes
time. And he loves
like Memento.
Yes.
And Dunkirk.
Yes.
Dunkirk was great. Three stories told in different time periods.
It takes the most complicated.
Yeah.
Which, and if you learn about screenwriting, they tell you don't make it this complicated. He purposely goes there.
Right.
And makes it complicated.
And then that being said, that is why The Dark Knight Returns was so disappointing. Because it's like, okay, you know, so Bruce Wayne, he's got a broken back. He's in this pit in this other country. And for 3 months, he's sitting there watching a TV, watching as the Gotham just goes to hell because of Bane. And then what does he do? Somehow he miraculously, like, stretches himself on a rope, repairs his back, climbs and jumps and makes the escape, you know, just because he has... Yeah, what time period is that? And then you go over, and then it's like those officers have been underground in those sewers for 3 months, and they come out. They still got these finely pressed suits, and the badges are still
he really
shiny. And
too much into things, doesn't he?
That's what I do.
I am never going to a movie with you.
Never
no,
go with him.
I am the best person to see movies.
No,
with.
He's not.
He's one of these that comes in with a little pad and a flashlight.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, with the light in the tip of the pen.
Yeah, exactly. As I'm taking notes, but yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah. No, that's. But that's me talking about movies.
Next week, I'm going to do my review of H.G. Wells' The Time Machine.
Which one? That more recent that more recent version was
no,
actually
the original.
Oh, the original.
Yes,
oh, okay.
I'm in the middle of reading it right
oh,
now.
Oh, are you reading it? Oh, well, I did. Yeah, I just finished on my vacation. I actually finished reading Ready Player One.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know if you've
that
heard about
pretty
this
good.
One. It's funny because it's Ready Player
more,
One,
I guess.
Ready Player One is a big
John
know,
hasn't picked up a book since
love note exactly. It's like a big love note
no,
to
he
80s
has,
nostalgia.
But not these books.
No,
these,
right. He's reading all the Yibbets and
much more cerebral.
Yeah, exactly.
He's reading Professor Teresa Gallarducci. Right,
right.
That's what he's reading. But yeah, it's all about 80s pop culture and everything. And I feel like I have to watch it with you, John, so that I can explain. Just like, okay, here's who the Iron Giant is. Here's what here's what you're missing out when you see that it's like they have to go through these Easter eggs to try and find solve the mystery. But that's a Spielberg movie, and that's going to be coming out, and I am very excited for that because that looks really good.
You've got the short version of this review up on where?
Oh yes, you can find it at facebook.com/movieminutemike. That's where I have my Movie Minute with Mike O. My Twitter handle is at Movie Minute Mike. So you can you can find me there. So
shameless plug.
Shameless. Yeah, shameless okay. plug because it's okay. a good review. So.
What movie are you going to watch next week?
I'm not sure what's coming out next week. But right now it's like we're all just holding for Ready Player One. And then that's going to dominate the theaters for, you know, Tomb Raider could be the first movie to finally push Black Panther out. Black all Panther right. is the
I
number one.
I don't know about that.
I don't know. You think?
Stinky.
I don't know. The reviews have been mixed, so we'll have to see. So.
All right. Hey, all right. Guys, thanks for jumping in with us this
is
afternoon.
Is it over?
Yeah, well,
it
is. Pretty much. Thank you all for watching us. We welcome your feedback. You can find us on Facebook or online at Real Investment News and Real Investment Advice. And the Underbelly Podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and pretty
SoundCloud.
Much anywhere else.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to be putting up the audio here in a few minutes, so
all right.
Tune in.
Have a good weekend. Go take a nap. It's National Nap Day.